your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to this week's episode of Alchemy. Super, super excited to have Ben Williams, co-founder of Highway Vodka, on the show with us today. Ben, welcome.
Hey, man. Thanks so much, man. Love to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. So, Ben, like I told you, I was reading a bunch of articles about you and your brand. And, as I was reading that, I'm like, oh, my God, hemp and vodka are two of my favorite things. So I had to reach out to you and get you on the show. But, for everybody who's tuning in today and hasn't heard of Ben's company, Highway Vodka is, Texas's first hemp seed vodka. It's the first Black-owned distillery in Texas as well. Mm-hmm. And lots of exciting things. So, I think, Ben, my first question for you is probably what you've been asked 1,000 times, but why hemp seed and vodka?
That's question one always. Yeah. man. So basically, it really started off as a hobby, man. Like, my business partner, lifelong friend, Wendell Robbins, we owned a couple bars and restaurants here in Houston, and just wanted to try distilling, just for the heck of it, and literally just started off, bought a little 13-gallon column still, and started distilling water, and then from there went to sugar washes, which is basically just sugar and water, and then to, get messing with some grains and stuff, along the way, just reading every book you could find, watching every YouTube video, just like a legit hobby, Mm-hmm. And, but kind of started getting kind of good at it, taking samples around, obviously, owning bars and restaurants, a lot of friends that have bars and restaurants too. So you go around like letting their bartenders taste what you're making, seeing what people think, Just out of curiosity, because, it's kind of cool. You roll up with a jar full of some homemade liquor, right? Like, it's like, yo, taste this. Started getting kind of good at it. And so what happened was a friend of mine opened up a dispensary in California. And I went out there to check him out, see how that whole thing was like. And I'll never forget sitting in his office surrounded by, 40 pounds of weed. And I was like, are we sure that this is – like safe, right? It just doesn't feel okay. Like, I don't feel okay here.
Yeah.
But anyway, he introduced me to some friends of his that were doing some distilling with cannabis and stuff like that. And I knew enough about it at the time then to kind of notice some parts of the process that I liked from what the plant was doing. And so that's what I always tell people. So when they say why hemp, it's like, it's not about like trying to get some hemp flavor or CBD or none of that stuff. It's really about what the plant does for the process of making our spirit, right? So we got home to start playing with hemp and play with all parts of the plant and settled on, which is always the easiest thing to find, is, the whole seed.
Yeah.
And literally just kind of went from there. Like, so just start with a mash bill of corn, hemp seed, and water. Boil it up, throw it in a fermenter. And that was when I noticed the first thing that the hemp seed was doing for the process. It was actually... my yields of alcohol got larger, like from the very beginning. And then, I was like, why is that? And so found out that hemp seed is like the amino acids in hemp seed act as a nutrient to the yeast. So yeah. And they sell products like to yeast nutrients and stuff, but it always messes your flavor up. Well, yeah. In my experience.
Thank you. Yeah.
But, this didn't. And so from our first batch that we ever made, man, it was like, it was the best stuff we had made to that point. So we just like, oh, let's keep messing with this, So, batches, dozens, really like hundreds of batches down the line, we started figuring out oils would also form during the fermentation period. And honestly, in the fermenter, it looked kind of nasty. It looked like olive oil on top of oatmeal. And so what we would do is siphon the liquid off from in between the oil and the grain because it just looked nasty, right? And again, we're just messing around, no big deal. But one day, just out of being lazy, we just dumped everything in the still because racking the liquid is like messy and sticky. So fuck it. Let's just throw all that shit in there, So we just literally threw the oil, the liquid, and the grain inside the into the still, and boom, that was the best thing we had ever made by far. And what happened was that oil floating on top kind of acts as like the first layer of filtration for the vapors, and they start to come up through the still. So by only distilling six times and only capturing the heart of the run, which there are four parts of, you know, when you do a run, a distillation is like, you know, the four shots, the heads, the hearts, and the tails. You can drink the hearts and the tails, and a lot of people blend in the tails, but we didn't do that. We only wanted the purest part of the run, so we would only capture the hearts, which boil off at a specific temperature range. So keeping that, distilling it only six times, we built our own filtration system so that we can be in control of what that filtration media is in the can, and then also, you know, our flow rates and all that kind of stuff. And by doing that, we were able to create something that is about as purely cut out, you know, all the adverse cognitors and fusels, they're either caught up in the oil from that first layer or caught up in the tails that we don't use. So we have the purest part of the run, number one, filtered out just right to leave in that viscosity difference from the oil that will smooth it out on your palate, yet hold some of that sweetness on the corn on your palate to give it a little nuance and character. And and give you a couple of anti-inflammatories to boot, you know, from the hemp seed and stuff like that. So
nice.
So yeah, man. I mean, and you know, obviously, I don't have the full-on scientific data to, you know, stand on, but all I have is my own experiences and a lot of people who, and I don't advocate this, who maybe had overdid it, you know, a little bit one night with some highway. And they all come back and say, hey, man, I didn't have a headache. I didn't have anything in the morning.
Really? Yep. I wonder if that happened. It has to do with the hemp seed.
That's what it is. I mean, I believe from my, like I said, my readings and stuff like that, there are some anti-inflammatory properties there. There are some, and the fact that we don't blend the tails, which is where typically the most adverse cognitive and fusels, things that will light you up are in that end, right? Yep. The majority of it, right?
Well, Ben, let's talk a little bit about like flavor profile. So, and I want to ask you this just because I'm a very big vodka drinker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love a, you know, extra chilled, extra dry, you know, martini with just nothing else. Like, don't even put any vermouth near it, right? And I'm extremely particular on my vodka. So I'm just curious from your product, like if you were to say, hey, you know, it tastes a little bit similar like this brand, because you know, from a vodka perspective, it's crazy. You've got, you know, Kettle, Grey Goose, Stoli, Smirnoff, like Tito's, Absolut, and they all taste so different. You know, what's kind of the, if you could kind of explain, I don't know how you would explain it, but like, you know, the flavor profiles.
I'll tell you, I'm horrible at tasting those. I'm not that guy. Like a buttery finish on the front end and, but, you know, I don't know. but one thing I'll tell you is interesting that when you're mentioning all those brands, is like one thing that gave me the confidence to even try to do this was I was having blind taste tests constantly, right? At the bar and restaurant and stuff. Like, hey, what's your favorite vodka? Pick two of them, and I would put Highway in there and, you know, do a short straw, long straw, medium straw thing. And I was consistently winning these things, right? And which made me, that's one thing. And in my first distribution deal, that's how I got it. Did the same blind taste test with them against two other brands, won unanimously. They're like, okay, let's go. So that being said, I put it up against anything because the cool thing about it is that it has a different viscosity. It has more body to it, right? But that body, that extra body that comes from that hemp oil, the oil from the hemp seed, rather, during the fermentation period and from the distillation process, it smooths it out. So, like, there is no burn, right? It takes all that away. And one lady gave me one of the greatest compliments. She's like, it almost drinks like a wine. I was like, oh, shit.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, I was like, I'm going to use that. That was cool, you know? And also, it has, like, a little bit more of the sweetness, but that also comes from the oil holding that sugar, that sweetness from the corn on your palate. So I read Smirnoff's book, King of Vodka. And one thing he said about the way they made vodka back in the day was that it had character, it had nuance. You could tell who made it, right? It came from there. And so it wasn't until America where they kind of pretty much gave this mandate of what vodka is supposed to taste like. And so if you really look at it, the majority of brands, they do kind of adhere to the, they're kind of very small variations of the other. And the only real variation that you're getting is the water, wherever the water is, where they're making it. But like,
that makes sense for, yeah. Cause water, every, you know, water source definitely has a different profile without a doubt.
Yeah. It's huge. It's huge. And so, so that's really what you're getting. But one thing about Highway, it definitely has more character and nuance than you would normally expect from a vodka. It's kind of made like in the older style, like just based on the, from the books that I've read and stuff like that, where, you know, you let the grains kind of stand out and talk for themselves. And so like, you know, like the heavy duty, like bartender guys that are like the mixology crew, you know, mm-hmm. they really like it because you know how a lot of those guys, they don't even like vodka. Ah, vodka is nothing. It's just alcohol, you know, whatever. You can't do anything with it. It's just when you want to get fucked up. But like, they'll take Highway and they'll be like, hey, this is buildable. I can build a cocktail around this. So
for sure.
That's cool about it. And so like personally, you know, I just drink it on the rocks or maybe with like a little soda or water.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. That's great. So Ben, you know, you guys launched the brand back in what, 2019? So you've been around for a couple years now, commercially.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of, you know, especially from what I was reading in all these articles, like you guys have had a pretty massive expansion into, you know, the States, and you're about to have all this distribution into Georgia, California, Florida. And so I think from a perspective of, well, first of all, you have a product with like two very highly regulated, you know, industries, right? Kind of cannabis and hemp and liquor. But, you know, what are maybe some of the keys to your expansion success? And also, you know, do you have to approach different markets like California and Florida differently as you're kind of moving in for the first time?
So it took 3 years to get our permits, manufacturing permits.
It's a long time.
That was a long time, dude.
Could have had three kids in that time.
Exactly. And what's interesting is the one of the first roadblocks, and it just all worked out because my business partner owned this big barn because he was all into horses, and that's where we used to run the still at anyway. That site passed as our, you know, as our site. So, but if that wasn't the case, we would have had to go rent or whatever property to and wait for 3 years, not knowing if we're going to get it or not. So that was the first huge regulatory kind of hurdle or whatever. But as far as state to state, one thing I'm learning, man, every state is different, right? Like, so you take a state like Georgia, and so there is no like big chain running the show in Georgia because one store, just take, say, Total Wine, they can only have two spirits licensed. So they could have eight stores in the state, but only two of them can sell spirits. So that makes that's a whole different game to play versus, because now you're basically dealing with a whole state full of independent stores in a sense, and not like one big score. Like if I can get this chain, you know, we're good. We kind of build from there. So like each state is different in that regard. Education is always a big piece, especially depending on which state. You know, California and stuff, not so much, you know, because they're cool with it or whatever. But Texas, where I'm at, you know, lots of people work out and, you know, in the oil patches and whatever. And they're very concerned about drug testing and medical and all that stuff, you know, these big corporate energy people and stuff. They're very concerned. So they always say, hey, like, you know, am I going to pass my drug test? Like, dude, we wouldn't be standing in this Total Wine if this was weed. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
So, but, you know, I get it, you know. So that's the biggest thing, is really just education and then just navigating each state's individual stuff. Let's just
totally. Yeah. I mean, listen, we have a pretty sophisticated software that, you know, a lot of the leading cannabis MSOs and the SSOs use to stay compliant in every single aspect of their business. And so if you think about it, like, you know, every state, it's its own nation, essentially, their own set of rules and regs, all the way down to the local jurisdiction. So I see what, you know, what goes on. And I know that, you know, the, you know, beverage market has very similar rules and regs. Obviously, cannabis is even more difficult. But still, you know, it's kind of for some people, they were like, they have, the, you know, they don't know how to navigate. Right. And that's why they use us. And then others, they're just like, hey, I know what I'm doing with my state. I know what I can and can't do. But they're kind of operating just there. They're not in an expansion mode. So,
yeah, man, no, I would say that cannabis, just from watching my friend with his dispensary during those years, there is not anything else probably other than dealing with, you know, given probably like, you know, being a doctor that gave birth to a baby that's more tightly looked at, every I, every T, that you must have it all together at all times. One fall off, you're out. You know, and it's just like, I mean, like, it's a tough business. I mean, that's a tough business. Alcohol, I'm not going to say is lenient, but it's not as tough as cannabis.
Yeah, we've also had many, many years, right, of a highly regulated market like, you know, alcohol, where, you know, it's still difficult to navigate, but not difficult. Cannabis now is just,
you've
got to understand all the local ordinances. Exactly. You've got to know what you can and can't do. Even creative.
Exactly.
If you want to deploy an ad campaign in cannabis, you got to make sure that you're abiding by the state and then the local jurisdictional laws.
Oh, dude, and that's a whole nother thing. You can't even like do the ads and stuff on the socials, because I run into that all the time because I have a hemp-based product.
Yeah.
So I can't even do like a lot of the typical marketing things that most spirit companies would do, which is pisses me off. But like,
well, Ben, we could definitely help you there, so don't worry.
Oh, yeah, please. We got
to talk offline there. We'll show you the way.
Okay.
So, you know, kind of going back to, you know, the business, I think obviously this is, you know, at least for you, you know, the last few years, so much learning, right? Obviously distilling, creating a new product, you know, what has been maybe for you, like what's the biggest thing that you've learned through this? Like kind of maybe an aha moment or like, whoa, this was
so really cool. Man. I'd say probably one of the biggest, I'll say this is a recent lesson, is that if you really want to scale and you really want to like go for it, you know what I mean? Just really just like, you know, I just want this thing to be everything that it could possibly be. You're going to have to take on partners. And like, that's something I've never done in my life. And I don't mean like, you know, your homeboy or whatever, you know, I mean like some outside people that ain't your normal drinking buddies. And that come with like a bunch of capital or know-how or something, right? And so I think that was my aha moment. I just was like, I could do fine. I could, you know, manage this business and make a nice living, you know, at where I am right now with it and stuff like that, and be cool and eventually reach those goals. Maybe one day, 20 years from now, you know, I'll be there. But if you want to go for it when the opportunity is hot, you know, more often than not, you're going to just have to take on some partners and be just very strategic about who they are. And the coolest thing I'm learning as I kind of get into this is like, you know, man, find those partners with, because everybody, well, not everybody, but money is actually not the hardest thing to find. The hardest thing to find is good money.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want dumb money.
Right.
I've been through that before. Let me tell you, like, there's nothing worse than dumb money, you know?
Exactly. I can't imagine somebody, you know, taking their check and then just like they calling you. So how many bottles we sell today? Like, hell no, dude. Hell no.
Oh my God.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I've so been in that same position, man. Let me tell you. It's crazy.
Yeah. So now I'm trying to make sure that the people that I'm dealing with, they bring a lot more to the table than money. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you listen, that's one of the most important things I would say that I would give you an advice for is, you know, smart people, good money, you know, really kind of thinking about how they could move the business, introduce you to people, help you with expansion, all
exactly.
That. So, cool. Well, listen, it was great having you on. And obviously you've listened to the show before. So, you know, we always talk a little bit about work and business, but then we ended with some quick fire questions just to, you know, let our listeners get to know you a little better.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yep.
All easy. Of course. I'm not going to give you any difficult ones.
Let's go.
All right. So, you know, obviously being in the hospitality, you know, industry, I would say also you've had restaurants before too, right? Or just bars?
Correct.
Both. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you probably love food just as much as I do.
Yep.
But, you know, kind of a strange question, but like, do you have any weird, quirky food combinations that you really enjoy where people are like, yo, Ben, what is that?
No, I'll say straight up, I don't. Like, I mean, my only newest food quirky thing right now is that I'm just really into hot sauce. Mm. I don't know how or why. Probably because I smoke and it's finally taking a toll on my palate. But like, I love hot sauce, dude. And I put that shit on everything except for cereal. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's the only thing. Because my wife is like, let me guess, you're about to put hot sauce on. I'm like, yeah, I mean, let's see what it is.
Listen, we had Mike Tyson on a couple of weeks ago. And if you haven't listened to that episode, you should. Because we were talking all about, you know, psilocybin and mushrooms and cannabis. And he's like, yo, and the toad, he's like, Jeff, I fucking put mushrooms in my cereal. And I...
that's disgusting, bro. I'm sorry.
It is so funny. But, you know, and mushrooms and the toad were like his favorite thing to talk about. But he was so awesome to have on the show.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So, aliens, do they exist?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm with you. Yeah. Where do you get your news?
Ooh, that's interesting. It depends on what. So I'm a pop culture fiend. So I hate to admit this out loud, but I do check like TMZ and stuff like that every morning.
Yeah.
I just do. I love that shit. It's just funny to me. It's nice and light. But from everything else, man, like I'm more of a reader.
Yeah.
So, and a podcast guy, right? So like, you know, I listen to like the New York Times, the Daily. I check Yahoo and MSN, you know, front page, USA Today. But I take all that stuff kind of, you know, just trying to keep abreast of what's going on without like deep diving into their perspectives of whatever, but just to get, you know, just kind of see what's going on. But I more so read than anything, man. Yeah.
I feel like after this last year, like political cycle, I don't watch news. I don't read news. I don't fucking care.
Yeah. News is weird.
Yeah. I just keep my head down and just, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like,
instead of news, I'm into learning. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, news is kind of whatever, but learning, like I said, reading and shit like that, that's where I spend most of my time.
Cool. Last question. What's the most expensive thing you've broken?
golly, there's a lot of, I mean, I could talk about motorcycles and stuff that I've wrecked, but like, broken, like where you're just like, ah, fuck. Man, I dropped a computer one time that, I had spent a lot of money on this small form computer, thinking that, you know, cause I wanted to make more room on my desk and, you know, and when I was setting it up, I just fumbled it and that was it. And I was just like, that's what I get for having this stupid, because you know, it's so small, I just had it in my hand, I'm multi picking up other crap and just
It happened.
It was the worst. So I would say that's, you know, broken other than wrecked, you know.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, listen, Ben, it's been great to jam with you and love what you're doing. Keep up the great work. You know, we'll be checking in on obviously all the expansion plans and, you know, keep on keeping on, you know?
Hey, man, will do. There's no other thing to do but that. So I appreciate it, man. And thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you.
Thanks, bro.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.